You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Kathy Lynn Che. Kathy, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks for having me.
So, Kathy, you're in Philadelphia. We're going to talk about what you're working on now, but we can start from almost anywhere. Since we are talking on Thursday, 23rd of April in 2020, we're of course in the middle of the pandemic. So, as with so many interviews, it seems to color things that people are working on now. So, in that context, what are you working on now, and perhaps how is the current moment coloring that, so to speak?
Well, it's interesting. I have a poetry manuscript that I'm working on. It's my second, that is based on my parents' experiences as Vietnamese refugees who ended up playing extras in the film of Apocalypse Now when they were in the refugee camp. So I've been gathering interviews for a while now. A few years ago, I went to the Philippines to actually take photos of where they were in the refugee camp, and then also where they had spent about 2 months filming Apocalypse Now. So I find it to be an interesting place where I'm at, because the project is mostly, it feels like it has a shape, but I'm sending it around to friends to get a feel for it. So I'm getting feedback from people. I'm also doing a daily writing practice with a group called The Grind, and I just add in, it's a little diaristic, but it started off as it was called Essay on Beauty, and I was thinking about what does beauty mean in the context of somebody who was sexually violated as a young person, and how does that color my experience in my own body or looking in the mirror. But there's also a racialized experience of being a Vietnamese American person in the U.S. And then it just weaves into just different ideas about that. So those are the two things. I'm supposed to be collaborating on a film project too, just a very short film on the Apocalypse Now, where we're trying to just show a clip of the film. They're in my parents are in the famous napalm scene, and to kind of mute out the background noise, like whatever, explosions and helicopters and Robert Duvall, you know, all of that, and have my parents sort of do this commentary over, and so centering their voices and their experiences of that film. In terms of COVID, you know, yesterday I didn't leave the house at all, which is fine, and you know, we're quarantining. So I made a gochujang chicken that was really delicious. So I've been cooking, and that feels very, and I don't cook very often, so it feels like an exciting challenge and restoration.
And what kind of chicken did you make? I didn't expect that, but what kind of chicken? Because that's true. Everybody is cooking things now, or maybe some people are. I've made some interesting things too. What was the chicken you said that you made, and what is that?
It's a slow roasted gochujang chicken. So gochujang is spicy sauce that is, you know, you can go get it for the Korean market. It's specifically it goes into different, I feel like sometimes you can pour in your bibimbap, like a gochujang sauce over it or something like that.
And it's slow roasted, so it takes longer than roasting a chicken the normal way?
It's the same as roasting a chicken. I think it took 2.5 hours in the oven. So it's probably
that is a little slower. Yeah, that's yeah. All right. But we're not talking about chicken roasting today. So let me ask you kind of at the opposite end of the spectrum. You know, you're talking about Apocalypse Now, and we should discuss that. And also, but you talked about The Grind and you know, probably the kind of more difficult thing to approach, sexual violence and so what will happen with that text? Because you're also, you have a manuscript you're working on, but that writing for The Grind sounds, you know, very, very intense and challenging material. So what will happen with that, or is there a goal for that material?
I don't think I'm writing with a specific goal. At this point, this essay, and I've never really written prose in my creative practice. It's always been poetry. So I've been wanting to try prose, and it was an opportunity to do so. And I've been writing this, you know, piece, just a couple sentences, a couple paragraphs a day, nothing too serious, and just letting it continue to build. And it's still going, so it's maybe 40 pages at this point. But I've sent it to some friends who really like it. They find it very exciting because it's different. My poetry manuscript, this second one, is very focused on this experience because I don't anticipate writing any more about Apocalypse Now in poetry form after this book. So I want to make sure that I do, you know, I get everything down that I want to get in there. And so I don't want to, you know, I have other poems, but I want to keep it focused. But this prose project is very sprawling, so I'm really excited by that. And also my first book had a lot to do with war and sexual violence. So it's a very, I used to make a joke about it. It's trauma-rama. There's a lot of pain, but I feel like it's also just, I really love the book. I feel like the language is stunning. It's funny, you know, we're taught to never talk about our own writing that way, but it's just a very emotional text that is, it's both direct and understated. So this is something I kind of put to bed, but when I started writing this essay, it felt very free to explore it from a completely different genre. I mean, yeah, I think of prose as completely different than poetry in many ways. So it just allowed me the freedom to sort of say the things that in poetry, maybe the compression kind of points to or hints at, and instead in prose I can just sort of like go on about something, sort of talk and make connections and just keep going.
So that's very interesting, and I feel like we should talk a little bit about Apocalypse Now. As you said, you know, you've been involved in this in a long time, and you're not going to write much more about that. But there's so much to talk about there, and well, I know you're, you know, going over different aspects of it. I'd like to hear a little bit about how audiences are responding, the conversations that are generated, because it seems like, you know, especially your parents giving commentary, you know, it reminds me of just this the difficulty of the effort. Maybe it's not the effort, but the difficulty of communicating to a white audience, a non-Vietnamese audience. You know, what happened when films like Apocalypse Now, of course, are these incredibly white perspectives, right? I mean, I think of an article I just read from, I don't know where, but it was about To Kill a Mockingbird, and it was written by a black woman, and she was saying, you know, this isn't my story. I don't find this, To Kill a Mockingbird for me. And she was a writer, of course. She said, was never this story of kind of emancipation or something, you know?
Right.
And that stunned me. I thought, wow. So in that context, I would imagine, and just correct me if I'm wrong, please, but that the work with Apocalypse Now, your parents talking about it, generates a conversation with an audience that might be resistant to understanding that conversation. So I'm wondering, like, what ensues there? Is there kind of a little bit of awakening to, like, wow, I didn't understand that kind of thing?
I would say that Apocalypse Now, just as a Vietnam War epic that won, you know, various Academy Awards, takes up a lot of the American understanding and imagination of the war. Francis Ford Coppola is a really beloved director. Many people, when I've mentioned this film, have told me, oh, that's, to me, the best movie of all, created of all time, you know. So there's a lot of mythology around the film. There's a lot of reverence. And in terms of imagery, it's just such a strong, like, powerful image burned into people's minds about what the Vietnam War looks like. And so I think people who have seen me read my parents' stories while having the footage in the background, I show the film at readings and then I read my parents. So it's the version of the film that, you know, it's like a live performance. And if I make the short documentary, it'll just be some version of that. And people come up and they're just very moved by it. Typically, it's not an attempt to erase the fact that the film and the American perspective of the film exists, but just simply a way of complicating the story. And I'm in my manuscript, I'm trying to complicate even my own assumptions, because I come from I'm a second generation born in LA Vietnamese American perspective, where my feeling is that my parents were used as props to, you know, they just escaped from a war. They just sort of, you know, my dad was in the war for 12 years, drafted, and he didn't want to be. And my mother lived during wartime conditions her whole, you know, up until the age of 22, until they escaped into the Philippines on a boat in the middle of the night, you know. And so they ended up in the refugee camp. And so my perspective is that this is exploitation, but my parents, that's not the perspective. They said they were incredibly bored in the refugee camp, and they were very excited to be making money. And the prospect of being in a film that is, well, you know, renowned they don't talk about that as much, but there is a kind of pride or excitement that they got to be in the film. But once I dig in, there are little glimmers of the things that I have in my perspective, which are, you have to do whatever the director tells you. You can't sort of protest because they're the ones who are going to pay you, right? So there's definitely, the truth is probably all of these perspectives put together. And I'm just trying to add, you know, some perspective to the story. And I feel like my parents' voices are hilarious and specific and unique, and in a kind of more global way, necessary to the story. So
yeah, I love that further layer of gaining perspective. You know, that's such a wonderful layer to get to, right? There's of course the layer that I'm talking about, like, you know, with white audiences understanding or not, but then to move further out, which seems to me further out, and what is it from your parents' perspective that's so different from yours? I mean, not opposite, but very different, you know, a kind of, so that's, you know, that's such a difficult thing also to kind of sift through, right? Because what does that mean? It, you know, of course your parents' experience sounds valid to me, and that makes sense. And at the same time, you know, the perspective of them being exploited makes sense too. So how do you, you know, balance that? And I know you're working on this now, but that's a tricky thing to balance. You know, in my mind, I think, well, that's difficult because, you know, both those feelings and also ideas seem correct.
Yeah, for me, that's why it's so valuable to have a bunch of different people read the manuscript. And I think everybody, that's not true. I'm sending it along to a lot of different readers. I actually typically don't think of my audience as white Americans. I'm not particularly interested in educating white Americans or something like that. I'm most interested in telling the story. And my sort of, if I were to select an audience in mind, it would be someone who occupies a similar subject position as myself. I think that's the aim. And then sort of others are welcome to read it, but that's not, you know, I'm not on this sort of education mission, that, you know, to like reform people or anything like that. But
it does serve that purpose. I mean, it strikes me that way because
it can, yes, absolutely.
I mean, this is an issue that I talk to a lot of writers and artists about, and it would, you know, I mean, it strikes me that way immediately because that's also the demographic that I'm from. That makes sense. So, is that primarily your audience when you're doing readings? The audience that you're articulating, if you had to choose an audience, is that the audience that you think you draw, or is it different?
I don't think so because so my day job, I run a nonprofit for Asian American writers. So it depends on who else comes, you know, to the reading. But I did my last reading, I think, was it was at the Poetry Project. It was myself, an artist named Wo Chan, and Ann Carson. So it was the three of us drew in like a pretty diverse audience, but it was a lot of Asian Americans actually in the audience. I think that is oftentimes a primary audience of mine because of the work that I do and building community amongst Asian American writers. So I think my aim is oftentimes a little bit, not saying that older, you know, I'm also very interested in, I grew up in LA, which is a very Latinx landscape. You know, my next door neighbor was Mexican and Salvadoran and, you know, owned a taco truck and are my brother's godparents. So I feel like my community that I grew up in, this is the context that I aim toward. I really don't necessarily aim toward a white audience, and I'm not resistant toward like a white audience accessing the text, but it's just not my concern, I would say, overall. Yeah, it's for us, you know.
Right. And that makes sense. And also, before I ask you the last question, you know, all of this, your nonprofit work and everything, is there a different lens on some of this because we're in COVID? Is that changing? I don't know, anything specific that you want to mention?
Yeah, it's something I wrestle with all the time. What does it mean to walk into the world embodied as an Asian or Asian American presenting person? And I know that a lot of people in the community feel like the work that they've been doing is the work they've always been doing. And yet at this time, it does feel acute. So it feels like the anti-Asian violence and harassment that is happening in the U.S., there's different reactions to it. And I react to it sometimes as I don't want to focus only on, you know, I feel like sometimes there is a lot of attention on violence against a particular community. And I feel like sometimes the work that we do to write, to express, to give voice to experiences is where I want to put my energy into. But I also wonder if that's not, you know, ignoring the problem to some extent. So it's a complicated thing for me to think through from the perspective as somebody who leads a nonprofit. And because I actually typically live in New York, almost everybody I know knows somebody who has died of COVID. And, you know, there's a lot of communities that have been affected, specifically Black and Brown communities, but definitely Asian communities have been definitely affected in terms of whether or not people are seen as a threat or, you know, seen as the cause of this experience. So I hesitate to chalk literature up as to only a sort of like to a way of proving humanity. I don't know that I believe that is the mission, you know. I think that, like I said, I have a very for us, by us model in my heart. And so insofar as the community needs support or individuals need support, that is where I feel like I can do the most good. So I check in with friends and I check in with people who are writers in my community quite a bit. And I try to create spaces so people can check in with one another. But I don't know. I don't know what is the task of this time, the urgent cry of the time necessarily.
Well, thank you so much for that. That's so well said. And now I'll ask you, what is the book you're currently reading?
So the book that I just finished is Lydia Yuknovich's The Chronology of Water. It's a memoir, and each chapter is maybe only 2-3 pages long, but it reads beautifully. It's very open. It writes in a way that feels very free, and it doesn't write in a way that feels like what one is expected to, in a way that people are expected to write. So I find it to be, I found like it to be incredibly beautiful and expansive. So really, everybody should check out that book, Lydia Yuknovich's The Chronology of Water.
Kathy, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. This is wonderful.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.